Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read. As I read it, there's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. And a special guest again, two episodes in a row, I have next to me my girlfriend, Juliana. Say hi.
Hello.
And Juliana is back because the original two-person episode that we wanted to record in, was it in January or February? I can't even remember when it was, when we were planning to do this. We were going to do an episode on The Hobbit. And then, so Juliana had read the Hobbit in German, and I'd listened to the audiobook, and we'd seen the latest movie version of the first half of it, or the first third, I don't know what it works out as. So we're going to do a spoilerific version of The Hobbit, but of course we got sidetracked into our epic discussion of The Man in the High Castle by Philip K. Dick, so... got some good responses back. Someone said it was their favourite episode yet, so that's pretty good. Yeah, if you just put your thumb up, Juliana, people can't hear you put your thumb up to say that you enjoyed.
Thank you very much for enjoying that.
Okay, but before we did that, we thought we'd just this afternoon, we wanted to go to the cinema, and we thought we could go and see what is it, Les Miserables. That was one option to go and see last night or the night before, but we didn't really feel like it. But I was like, hey, I'd really like to see The Life of Pi because it's in 3D, and we'll go and see a 3D movie like we went to see The Hobbit in 3D. So
yeah.
tell what you're the one who really wanted to talk about. Oh, also, I said on the last episode, I said, hey, if anyone wants to listen to a review of The Life of Pi, because I read that book recently... send me a message, and people say, well, of course it's fantasy, of course it's science fiction, there's an island that he goes to, this, you know, where this island, which again, spoilers, could maybe be fantasy, and it's like, oh, he goes across the oceans in a boat with a tiger, that has to be fantasy. Well, I just see that as fiction. It's just an untrue story, which is fiction, and the book is about it being a true or true, maybe not true, or whatever it is, fiction. So what do you want to say about The Life of Pi? Because I don't have a huge amount to say about it.
First of all, I recommended it to you.
Yeah, because when we went to see The Hobbit, The Life of Pi, we saw the trailer, the preview for it, didn't we, in 3D?
Yes, the trailer came up, and I read the book maybe 2 years ago or so.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a really nice story, and I really enjoyed reading it because it has so many layers of things going on there.
Yeah, and in the same way that you were recommending the Man in the High Castle to people, it's like, oh yeah, and the Germans go to the moon and to Mars, and I was like, that's just a diversion, that's just a small thing. You just said to me, oh yeah, it's about a guy who, because, oh, this is the thing, I really don't like watching trailers, so when we watched the trailer, I don't think I actually saw it, because I was probably had my eyes closed during most of the trailer, didn't I? And there was the Wizard of Oz, the wonderful Wizard of Oz trailer as well, I can remember closing my eyes. No, but before, that was for The Hobbit as well, and I remember back in December when we watched that, and I just hate trailers, because it's like, oh, let's just spoil the whole thing, let's just put all the best bits of the trailer, all the most impressive things. And the other thing that I hate, because I really don't like spoilers, is DVD menus. It always comes up, and I'm just like, why are you putting scenes? It's like, and I know, because there's like a scene with, what was it, what did we see the other day, was it the searching for the friend at the end of the world, and there was a scene where two people met, I can't remember where it was, but when it got to that point in the movie, I was like, oh, I know what's going to happen in this scene, because I saw a moment, like I saw a single image in the thing. Anyway, so generally I avoid trailers unless it's for movies, which I know I'm not going to watch.
This is why I always prepare the DVDs.
Yeah.
It's ready for you to come and watch the movie.
Anyway, what were we going to say about the... So about The Life of Pi. You said, oh, it's about a guy who is both a Christian... No, he was, you can't really say both, but he's a Christian, he's a Muslim, and he's a Hindu, all in the same guy. And I was like, wow, that sounds like super heavy-handed in terms of like, oh, belief is good, you know, and the whole kind of like Hollywood wishy-washy, all you have to do is believe. And so I went into listening to the audiobook, which is actually a really, really good book, really, really good audiobook. This is The Life of Pi I'm talking about here. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, because I thought it was going to be like massively heavy-handed, and to be honest, it was massively heavy-handed in its preachiness and cleverness, right? But like I say, the cleverness won over in the end. That I thought it was a very, very interesting story, a very clever story, and I worked out kind of halfway through what the story was really about, which is, I don't really want to spoil it, but when it comes down to the end, that kind of that last line, I kind of worked out what was going on with it, probably not as early as I should have or could have, but it kind of dawned on me. And then just the way that the story was put together, I thought was amazing. And then we watched the movie today. What do you think of the movie?
Yeah. I wanted to say some other things.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
So the English title of the book is called Life of Pi, mm-hmm. which I think really fits because it's mainly like a story of his life.
Yes.
The German title is some kind of a spoiler already.
Oh, really? What's it called? Is it called in a boat with a tiger?
Yeah, it's kind of like Shipwrecked with a Tiger.
Oracle
on the Mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, why always is the German title a spoiler?
Yeah.
I just don't understand it. And then, of course, on the cover you see... yeah, of course.
Well, yes, of course. I understood that. I knew it was like there's a guy in a shipwreck with a tiger. But the way that the book does it is really interesting. That it doesn't tell you who Richard Parker is until he's in the boat, until he's getting to the boat. And of course that is a mild spoiler, but of course we're talking about it now, but like it's just one of the many things that I think the book handles way better than the movie.
Yes.
Because in there it's sort of like, hey, look at that massive adult Bengal tiger, it's called Richard Parker, and Richard Parker, and then you know that it's one of those weird things. But in the book it's just like, oh yeah, and I spent in a and I was in the boat with Richard Parker. Oh yeah, Richard Parker, he had such a big influence on me. Richard Parker, Richard Parker, Richard Parker. And it, like, for the first quarter of the book before he actually gets to the shipwreck, you're like, well, this Richard Parker character, he sounds really interesting. And then you're like, oh, it's the tiger. And of course you don't need to, now I've spoiled that, that's not something that's... Of course, it's kind of spoiled. So, anyway,
I mean, just if you look at the poster of the movie,
who's in the boat. But the thing is, I had closed my eyes during the trailer, so I kind of knew what was going on. But only because I'd seen the cover of the book so many times before. Anyway, so what else are you going to say about the book?
Yeah, I mean, the book was good fun for both of us, and then we watched the movie today. It was the second movie for us in 3D,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
and I really enjoyed it because
it's so much lighter than the book, though.
It has some really nice special effects and they work really well with the 3D effect.
There was only a few times when I was like, yeah, that tiger's made out of rubber. Well, not rubber, but, you know, like when you see a CGI kind of thing, there was a few moments.
Like just maybe two times.
Unfortunately, the last shot when he... spoiler, the last shot of the tiger as he... and I was just like, oh, yeah, it's a rubber tiger. That was one time I noticed it.
But like the movie has some really nice images, like just when you sit there and look at it, the beautiful nature and the sea and that was really good in 3D. I really enjoyed that.
However, we've got to not let the 3D-ness influence our enjoyment of the movie too much, because when we were talking to a friend of ours, Dave, about Prometheus, he was saying, oh yeah, it looks fantastic in 3D in the big picture. It's like, yeah, we watched it on a DVD at home, so we didn't get the full benefit of all of the special effects in 3D whizzing around us, whereas with The Life of Pi we did. Anyway, I think the movie is okay, but I do think the book is just so far beyond it in terms of the way it deals with the story. The acting in the book is way better. I know it's weird to say that, but like when you're taking... and also I listened to the audiobook, and the acting of the audiobook is way better because he's, you know, it's just the narration is talking about what was going on, and it does say sometimes, but in the movie it's sort of like, hey, Richard Parker, yay, you know, and it's, sometimes it's just like, yeah, but you wouldn't really say that. And sometimes he's like, yes. And it didn't always sell it for me, but it was in the book and in the audiobook was really interesting for that. Anything else to say about Life of Pi? Because I really want to move on to The Hobbit.
Yeah. But I really think that in a movie like that, you can't just put everything in that is
the
book. And
no, the thing
going
is
going on in your head.
Yeah, if I was to make a movie of The Life of Pi, I mean, I don't want to say, oh, I could do a better job. No, I couldn't do a better job. Ang Lee did a fantastic job. And I can understand how difficult a book like that would be to put on the screen. Unfortunately, the before we went in, I was like, oh, yeah, I know the French, the bit with the Frenchman, the French cook, that's one of my favourite things. And then that whole thing was just missed out of the movie completely. And I was like, oh, but they probably, and this is what I'm saying, oh, they probably filmed that bit to go in because they wouldn't have got the actor that they had to play the French cook, which is Gérard Depardieu. His name comes up in like big writing at the beginning of the movie. And I was like, oh, great. Yeah, Gérard Depardieu, they've got like an interesting actor to play the French cook character. And then he's in the movie for what, 30 seconds or something like that?
For one scene.
So I understand how much more they could have shot or probably did shoot and then it just didn't make it into the final edit. But I understand exactly why it didn't make it into the final edit. And I do have some other complaints about the movie, but otherwise it's a very beautiful movie. Even if as a movie, it's a very good movie, but as a book, I think it's a really remarkable book. I probably wouldn't give it 5 stars, but it might, you know, it might be 4.5 stars if I was to give it a rating in that way. So I do recommend the book. But, and this is just one other final thing, is like, if I'm not going to make a full episode about The Life of Pi, because I could easily talk for an hour about that book very easily, and probably you could as well, Juliana.
Yes.
But people say, well, if that's not science fiction or fantasy, what is? But for me, it's difficult because, like, where would I draw a line? It's just like anything that is untrue. If anything that is fiction, which has got anything to do with any magic in it, does that make it fantasy? Or because then, like, I have read some horror books. You know, I recently read a novella length story called Fat Vampire, and of course there's vampires and stuff like that, but I'm not going to review that for a science fiction, as a science fiction book. And it's not really a fantasy book, it's more of a, you know, it was more of a, like, a satirical horror kind of thing. And The Life of Pi doesn't really fit into what I consider science fiction or fantasy, because it was a story about something being untrue. Well, I wouldn't say it's a story about something being untrue. What I'm saying is that there isn't any explicit
something that could not actually happen.
Yeah, and of course there is one speculative bit where he goes to the island, and that is interesting. But that's such a minor point. It's like saying anything that doesn't exist and then is included in fiction makes it into speculative fiction, which is either fantasy or science fiction. And I can't really let that slide in a way, you know, and include every single thing which has got something untrue in it. I know it's a weird thing.
Yeah.
What do you suggest?
But I think it's good that we do talk about it, because then maybe people read that book and find it interesting as well. And
yeah, it's worth reading.
It's really worth reading.
It is a book about ideas, which is, as Jesse from SFF Audio Podcast, he's always saying, oh, if it doesn't have any ideas in it, I'm not really interested in reading it or something like that. Any TV, any movie he'll watch or any, I can't remember, I listened to a recent episode, he says, no, I need an idea in it. And it has got a very strong idea. Strangely enough, though, you've got to get about 2/3 of the way through the novel before you work out what that idea is.
Yeah, but the novel really makes you read until that point.
Yes,
it's not that you have to, oh, I have to go through, I have to check out the problem itself. No, it really takes you through, and it's really enjoyable to go through his story. Yep. And also what I want to say is that this is a situation where I read the book first and then watched the movie.
Yeah, me too.
Just totally the opposite to The Hobbit.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, let's move on to the... Oh, before I do that, I might as well do the Audible plug. If you go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP, you can get a free trial from Audible, which means you can listen to an audiobook. And I'm going to recommend The Life of Pi, and because it's a really good novel, and have someone read it to you. Normally I'd read a book, I would recommend a book which I've already read once and then listen to as an audiobook, which I do. I seem to do a lot. Pretty much half of the books that I listen to as audiobooks are books that I've read before. And I'm like, oh, I want to read that again. But I don't really want to read it again, because reading takes up time and effort, and I could be reading other stuff. Most of my reading at the moment is taken up with non-fiction books and other things. And so when I actually want to, you know, get some book input, Audible and audiobooks are a really, really great resource. And they've got, what is it, like 15,000 science fiction and fantasy books there, or something like that. Loads and loads and loads of series. If you want a good overview of what kind of stuff that they've got on, listen to the SFF audio podcast with the latest new releases and new arrivals episodes that they do. Gives you a really good overview, but I'm going to recommend Life of Pi. I would recommend The Hobbit. However, The Hobbit, because Audible... look at this. In the Audible plug, I'm now going to knock Audible. They made The Hobbit into a 2-credit book because it's so popular at the moment, and everyone's going, oh, I want to listen to the audiobook of The Hobbit. I was like, it's 2 credits. It takes 2 credits. No, but if you sign up, you can get 1 credit either each month, or if you get a platinum deal, the platinum plan, which I do, I get 2 credits each month for, you know, like 20 euros or something like that, maybe a little bit more, which works out perfectly for me because you can download these massive chunky books which are 40 hours long and for 1 credit. But sometimes if a book is very long, like the Great North Road that I read before, they split into 2 credits. And also if a book is super popular like The Hobbit, they can go, well, we can make it cost 2 credits. And who will complain? Well, I'm going to complain, but I also just pay the credits because I got some credits left over. Anyway, so go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP and you can get a free audiobook, which is yours for life. You can listen to it as many times, and you can download it as many times in the future. And also, there are some books which are available on Audible, and then they're not available anymore. But if you've already purchased it, you can still download it. It's still there in your own personal library for you to keep downloading, even if it's not available for purchase anymore, you know, and there's other rights issues. That book is yours, which is really great. So let's get on to The Hobbit, because we're 15 minutes in already. And what do you have to say about The Hobbit?
So first of all, when I was about 10 years old,
yeah,
my mum gave me the book called The Little Hobbit in German.
Yeah.
Der kleine Hobbit.
Yeah.
And as a child, I've read loads of books, many, many kinds of books, all stuff. And I really tried to read it. I started twice or like even more times. But I never got into it. I never read it when I was a child.
Nope,
never. And yeah, and then there came later on, there was this big, oh, Lord of the Rings hype.
Yeah.
J.R. Tolkien. And I must admit, I watched...
What was that, when the movies came out, like 10 years ago?
When the movies came out, and everybody said, oh, you should watch it and read the books and all that. And I never could read it. I watched the first movie, second...
The Lord of the Rings.
The Lord of the Rings.
The Fellowship of the
Fellowship of the Rings. I watched that, fully,
yeah,
completely. The second one, I like kind of, well, I was like in a bus somewhere in the school group, and I watched and I didn't watch at all the third one.
No,
I have no idea about it. So yeah. And then,
yeah,
the both of us went to watch the,
yeah, because we
the Hobbit
partly we just wanted to watch the movie, but also we wanted to check out this HDR. What is it? We saw the high frame rate 3D. Original version with intermission, which that intermission comes in really handy. People go, oh, you don't want an intermission. No, what I really like about the German cinemas is that they put intermissions in the long movies. So when you go to see, what did I go and see? The Dark Knight Rises, they had an intermission. And it's so good to have a break, even though it is a bit distracting, it takes you out of the movie. It takes everybody out of the movie at the same time, and then everyone gets up, and everyone goes for a piss, and everyone gets some more drinks and popcorn, and then everyone sits down again, and then the movie starts, and you don't get people getting up and going out and getting up and going out, because we saw it, and every seat in the cinema was full. Maybe, yes, like the front row down the, like down the front wasn't full. So it's really, really great. Anyway, we don't want this to become a movie review thing, but you're saying that because you watch the, because you watch the movie, The Unexpected Journey, yes, Hobbit, The Unexpected Journey, you thought, ah, let's check out the book.
Yeah, I just try again to read it. And then I downloaded the German ebook.
Yep.
Which of course was more expensive than it probably would have been like
a year ago. Yeah.
A year ago before that. But yes, I downloaded it and I read it, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, of course, it's a great book.
it's good, but really for me, this is a really, really good children's book.
Yes.
Like, if I would have read it when I was 10...
It would have been way better.
No, it wouldn't have been... But it suits very well for this age. This age of children, and like the story itself is like really, like when you read it as an adult, you really can read, like, especially if you also read like normal adventure stories and science fiction and stuff and fantasy. There's a totally different level of story and writing and telling the story that goes on in The Hobbit.
Mm.
And then there was this clash with the movie for me.
Well, let's get into the bit. For me, The Hobbit was one of those first fantasy books I've read. You know, because it was a children's book, and you read it, and you go, oh, right. And it immediately gets into your mind, like, what a hobbit is. And for so many people, like, I guess, who've grown up with The Hobbit, the hobbits are just another kind of race. You've got dwarves, you've got the elves, you've got the goblins, you know, that kind of stuff, and then you've got the hobbits. And it's, but of course it was just one creation of Tolkien to have this extra little thing, because, you know, the elves can be I don't know, where do elves come from? They come from like Europe, and trolls come from, you know, the Nordic countries and things. And the hobbit is the very British kind of mythical creature that he was going for there. Like the Shire is, you know, a little bit of English countryside there. I mean, that's the kind of thing he's going for. But yeah, so I kind of grew up with The Hobbit being a book that I knew. I mean, I probably read it when I was maybe 10, or probably around about that time. I remember reading all the way through The Lord of the Rings probably when I was about 13 or 14, I guess, 13 years old or something. And like, I read The Hobbit many years before that. But yes, it's interesting for you to think that when you were talking about the clash with the children's book, the very childlike nature of the book. Oh, by the way, this is going to be a totally spoilerific episode, because we just presume that you've read The Hobbit. The other episodes that we've done, when we reviewed Dune and what was the other one that we did? The Hyperion. That was like the second time I'd done episodes on them, so I didn't mind doing, like, in the past I did a non-spoiler version, and then our review was a spoiler version of the conversation. Here, we're just presuming that you know The Hobbit. Yeah. I mean, really.
And what was it? 200 of your Goodreads friends?
Yeah, yeah. 200
already rated it, yeah. So they obviously read it.
Yeah, obviously. So we're going to just presume that you know this story, at least. Even if you don't know, even if you're not seeing the movie, I'm sure a lot of people haven't seen the movie, but I'm sure most people have read the book or know it so much. It's like one of those things where you say, oh, have you ever seen Star Wars? No, I've never seen Star Wars. Well, what's the story of Star Wars then? And you get people to tell you that the story of Star Wars. I always enjoy those kind of things. But yeah, for me, like, The Hobbit was one of those things like Star Wars that I can't remember a time when I didn't know what a hobbit was. You know, it was one of those things that you go, oh, and there was a hole in the ground and a hobbit lived there. And it wasn't a smelly, dirty hole in the, you know, one of those great opening lines of a novel. Although the opening of the book, it does go on a long time, doesn't it? And the opening of the movie, boy, does that go on a long time. But The strange thing was is that when Tolkien wrote The Hobbit, he wrote it as a children's book. And then he wrote The Lord of the Rings, and it's got a much more adult tone. You know, The Lord of the Rings is not a children's book at all. Yeah, you're just nodding there. Nobody can hear you nodding. But the point is that Tolkien actually considered The Hobbit to be a children's book written for children in the world of The Lord of the Rings, in Middle-earth. So it's like a book within a book in a way, you know, it's sort of like there and back and then. So he sat down to write this story, you know, like in the beginning of the, in the movie, it makes it very clear.
Yes.
But he is writing, or the way Tolkien kind of pictured it, maybe later he pictured it this way. But the idea being that the tone of the book is a children's book because Bilbo Baggins wrote it as a children's book. There was actually a lot of darkness in the real story as he sees it, which Bilbo himself didn't include in the story because he wanted it to be suitable for children. However, the actual events were a lot darker or a lot more adult in the way that he, you know, he wanted the Lord of the Rings to be and was. And I'm not sure how much this was in his mind beforehand or afterwards, but he later on, he wanted to write... he was actually rewriting The Hobbit to fit the tone of The Lord of the Rings.
Tolkien.
Yeah, well, Tolkien, yeah, yeah. Tolkien. He wanted to rewrite it, and I think he, you know, some of the changes went in there, you know, sort of continuity changes got into the later editions, but he wanted to write a whole new edition, which was like, okay, it's going to be this, the story of The Hobbit with the characters of The Hobbit, but with the tone of The Lord of the Rings trilogy, like the main book. So when we actually get to the movie version, oh, could you take this a second? Because I need to take my job. When we actually get to the movie version, what we have is that mixing of those two tones, that the two tones where he's going, right, okay, this is Peter Jackson directing it, so okay, we've got the source material of The Hobbit, but we've also got the continuity and the tone of The Lord of the Rings, now let's mash them together. And that was the thing that I actually disliked most about the, well, not most about it, I think the running time, I think it could have been a half an hour shorter with a lot of material taken off at the beginning, but there was some, the clash of the tonal differences between, it's like, hey, now we're going to do some Lord of the Rings stuff. Hey, do you recognize this character from Lord of the Rings? And over here, look, we're back in Rivendell, which was also in Lord of the Rings. And look over here, this is a bit which references something that happened in Fellowship of the Rings, and over here is more Lord of the Rings. But in between all of that, it's like Hobbit, 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 Hobbit. Yeah, so it was Hobbit, 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 Lord of the Rings, Hobbit, 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 Lord of the Hobbit, Hobbit, Hobbit. Yeah. So that's the kind of thing that we got going on. What do you want to say about the tone of the movie?
Because yeah,
that's what you're going to say.
This is my main complaint about it, because I watched the movie before I read the book.
Yes,
but I knew it was a children's story, and by never had, because I never read the book before, this was very obvious to me that these two storylines were going on at the same time. You had the Hobbit story, which was the children's tone.
Yeah.
And it really is like the children's tone.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
the dwarves are bouncing off walls and falling over.
Yeah, and the
juggling and
the
singing.
Giants. No, what were the
trolls. The mountain
Yeah,
giants.
The trolls, yeah. They are like, oh, they are a little bit dumb and a little bit silly, and the little hobbit just jumps around and gets them like to be a bit.
Yeah.
Like, so, and then
way better in the book.
And then on the other side, there is this like, oh, we're making a Hobbit movie, but we want to have the audience that watched, that was interested in The Lord of the Rings, we want them to go in there as well. So we create this white orc.
Yeah, let's talk about the way out. Now, in the book, and this is a criticism of the movie, however, it's one of those things that it's a criticism of the movie, but I understand that they had to do something like this, is that they just pretty much retold, like, oh, and there's a guy in the beginning of the, like, when we do the flashback to Thorin, Thorin Oakenshield, what's he doing? He's going over to the mountain, but then there's another battle that he was in, and at the beginning of the Fellowship of the Rings, there's this bit where Sauron comes out, and the leader of the army he's fighting against gets knocked down, and then the other guy is almost going to kill him, and then he reaches out, grabs a sword, and cuts Sauron's hand off, and then the ring comes, or is it the finger off, or something like that, and he goes like that. And then in the backstory with Thorin Oakenshield, the same thing happens. It's like Bolg... No, was it Bolg the... No, is that from the book? Is it Bolg the... The
dragon?
No.
What?
That's Smaug. No, Bolg. The we should have looked up the character list from on the Wikipedia page. Bolg.
Oh, you have it there?
Yeah, Bolg. Is it Bolg?
What are you talking about?
No. The goblins and wargs come off, and it's who's the
The what?
the name of the main bad guy. At the end of the book, there's the Necromancer. The guy, you know, the five armies that fight at the end, the goblins, and there's the goblins and the wargs, and then who the leader of that is called Bolg, I think. Bolg.
Okay. Well, we need to click on that one.
Battle of Fire. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but there's nothing worse in podcasts than listening to people look stuff up on Wikipedia. So they're going and they're going like, there's a company like that, and the goblins come out, and the War of the Dwarves, and the. But what's the name of the guy? There's the main guy, the main Bolg. Anyway, in the movie, it's different. In the movie, they added in the white orc, whose name was, or maybe the maybe on that one is the great goblin, the battle, Azog.
Azog.
Yeah, who beheaded Thror and lost his forearm to Thorin in the battle. So anyway, I'm just saying that the battle outside the Dwarven Kingdom of Moria is just a replay of the opening of Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
But that's kind of mentioned in the book. That's some backstory in the book, but we never see Azog. I don't know who's Bolg? Maybe I just made Bolg up.
Bolg?
Yeah, this is where we get loads of... maybe I can just control F. Bolg.
There's nothing there that...
Simba. Wow, I just totally made up a... who's Bolg? I just totally made up a new Hobbit character. Bolg. Wow. Hopefully someone understands who... Azog. I'm sure in the movie it was something like Bolg. Anyway, so in the movie they were like, okay, let's make Bolg into our orc. Azog. I'm going to call him Bolg from now on, or Azog, depending on what it goes. So they're like, okay... Azog is the guy who commands the five armies at the end, or the orc armies.
Yes.
However, it's this weird thing that in the terminology between the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings is actually different, because in the Hobbit, what they call goblins are actually orcs. In Lord of the Rings, this is only my own understanding. Maybe it's incorrect. But the point is that goblins are orcs. But, you know, in The Hobbit, they just used a different name for them.
Okay.
In the book, goblins, when it says goblins, is actually orcs. It actually just, it's the same thing as an orc. But in The Lord of the Rings, Saruman creates the Uruk-hai, which are crossbred with elves, which means they're goblins or orcs, which can go out in the daylight.
Yes.
And that's the whole point. That's what made them more dangerous, is that they could march long distances above ground, whereas in The Hobbit, all of the orcs, or goblins, are kept below ground because they can't come out. And when they come, and that's one of the reasons why at the Battle of the Five Armies at the end of The Hobbit, they suddenly turn up because they've gone all that way in underground passages, all that, you know, as far as they possibly could. And through, was it through the, they went around the top of the Mirkwood and stuff. Through the mines. And so that's suddenly, when I was watching the movie, I was thinking, okay, this is a white orc, but they're running around during the daytime and chasing the hobbits during the daytime. But I was thinking, but Saruman hasn't made the Uruk-hai, so how can they come out in the daytime? Because one of the whole things in the Hobbit, the book, is that the reason why the goblins couldn't chase them out and it took them a day to catch up with them and before the eagles saved them, you're like, well, the reason is because the goblins couldn't come out during the daytime, so they had to wait until it was dark and then come out. But then in the movie, the goblins stayed in the caves, and then the orcs were something different. So after being chased out of the caves by the goblins, then suddenly the orcs take over the chase again.
But wasn't it also these, like, massive big wolf kind of things?
Yeah, they're the wild. Wargs.
Wargs.
Wargs, yes. Wargs. Yeah.
Okay. But also the orcs are chasing them.
Yes. But what I'm saying is that by using a mix-up in terminology, which orcs and goblins are actually the same thing in the mind of... Tolkien while writing the books. Wow, this has become very nerdy, hasn't it? Well, I think you're fine. Not a goblin. And I'm probably wrong with this. I just made up a character called Bolg, who is actually called Azog. Who's Bolg? Maybe, but type in Bolg into the book. Maybe there is a thing called... Yeah, maybe it's do a search. So, I mean, you go, yeah, see, Bolg. Who's Bolg? Bolg comes from the north. Bolg is a guy. It is a character. Oh, I should have typed this in. Let me type into Google. Okay, here we go. Bolg. Let's just Google it. Yeah, Bolg, Lords of the Rings. There is a guy called Bolg. Here we go. The actions of Bolg was a goblin orc leader of the Misty Mountains during the late 30s. Yeah, so this is, so I didn't make up Bolg. Okay, so Bolg was the son of Azog of Moria and succeeded him after his death in the Battle of... Bolg ruled the Northern Kingdom and led the army of... So, okay, that's it. So in the movie, he's called Azog, the father of Bolg, and he will appear. So yeah, I didn't just make up Bolg. So my nerd credentials are still intact. he's just not mentioned on the Wikipedia article of The Hobbit. Anyway, so I did have the right name in my head.
Yeah, but now we totally lost any path we were
okay,
going on.
Okay, so I can't even remember what we're talking about because we're just complaining about how different the movie was from the book and yeah. How far are we into this podcast already? What are we like 35 yeah. minutes into it and you haven't even said anything about the book yet? So yeah. Did you enjoy the book?
Yes, I really enjoyed it. Yeah. Though I must like when it comes to ratings later, it's really difficult for me to rate it because. It's a children's book.
Yeah.
And of course, then it's not a book for me as I am now.
Okay, like to say, the way that I do the ratings is purely by subjective enjoyment, like my own enjoyment. For example, one of the reasons I really liked The Life of Pi was because I was listening to it while sailing across the Pacific Ocean, listening to the audiobook literally while sitting in a deck chair on a ship looking at flying fish flying away from the boat in the Pacific Ocean. I mean, that's the kind of thing which makes me, or it lets me, enjoy a book a lot more. And The Great North Road was set in Newcastle, and I once lived in Newcastle, so all the boring bits when they're just looking around streets and stuff like that, for me that was really interesting because I used to live on that street and I used to go down there and stuff like that. So it's purely subjective. You can just give it any rating that you want. How much did you enjoy it?
Yeah, a lot.
Exactly. So you give it 4 stars then. So why are you bringing up the rating now? Just because it's a children's book and
it wasn't... Yeah, because it's difficult. Yeah, I wouldn't rate it 5 stars because it's not... It's very much... I wouldn't say childish, but some things are very, like, not very deep.
Yes.
Like some...
It is quite out there.
Action is some really, like, soft and nice and... Yeah, it suits for children.
But in the book, it's got like this constant tone throughout.
Yes, the whole book is one thing. It fits together very well.
Yeah, even the singing.
The singing. What? Yeah, I wanted to talk about the singing.
Yeah, go for it. This is a spoilerific we got no form to this review at all. Just a chat. Let's go for it.
Singing in books.
Yeah.
Singing in books means you have... Oh, I would just find one of these. You have, like, maybe 3 pages long. You have some kind of poem.
Yeah.
That's because it's written.
It's just lyrics, yeah.
Which doesn't really make a lot of sense. It's difficult to read.
Yeah.
And then you should imagine in your head somebody is singing to that. Yeah. So... Should you just invent a melody with it to actually?
Well, that's
make
what the audiobook narrator
or...
did. The audio,
really? That,
yeah, of course. That's what I actually really enjoyed about the audiobook. Let me just look up the narrator's name here. His name was Rob Inglis. Yeah, there's like, but it's an ebook, so of course it's gonna take up a lot of pages. But no, Rob Inglis, really great narration. I really enjoyed it. But of course, the good thing is that when he gets to the song, he actually sings it. And in a book, I was just... Same with me. When I got to the book, in The Lord of the Rings especially, because the songs go on for pages and pages, and the poems and the epics that people retell within the book itself, it's just like, oh, just get on with it. And you keep reading it, and it's actually difficult to read it and get the meaning out. Whereas when you actually hear someone singing it to you...
Yeah, it makes a lot more sense.
Although, like you say, there's lots of... You see all these verses... like this could be 8 verses of the song. He doesn't change the tune. He never changes the tune between the verses. So it's sort of like a tune, the same tune again from the next verse. It's like your John Dowland music that you sing, like it's like quite repetitive.
And then the end, you can sing along.
Yes, of course. By the end of the last verse, you're like, right. If you had the words in front of you. Now, I'm not quite sure where he got those melodies from. Maybe that Tolkien like wrote down. I mean, it's the kind of thing that he would have actually done, is recorded some melody. You know, he did everything. Yeah, he illustrated the books and did the covers and the maps and the runes and the scripts and the backstories and all this other kind of stuff and the maps. I said the maps, didn't I? Yeah.
Yes.
So he probably did all of that himself. So it wouldn't have surprised me if he had actually put some of these to music himself as well.
Yeah,
but no, the audiobook version I actually really enjoyed listening to. But again, because you got to them. And it's always funny. It's like, and here's what they sang, or and here's what he sang. And it gets that way, and you're like, okay, here we go. And even in the middle of an action set piece in the book, he's sort of like, and now I'm killing spiders. Sting is my name. Sting is my name. I come here and sting, sting, sting. I'm a sting. Dum, dum, dum. Sting is my sting, 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 sting. You know, that kind of. Of course, I'm just making this up.
but if you're just reading it, and I'm just talking about myself. I read books not loud.
You don't read them out loud.
I just read them in my head.
Of course.
But then when you read a book, it's really difficult to then invent a fitting melody to poem, and then you
can't
read
be as bad as in the movie. Actually, there was one song in the movie where they're singing about the home, the lost home, and it cuts them, and they're all standing around the fireplace going, and that's good. But when they're singing that's what Bilbo Baggins hates, it's like, wow, this is really a kids' movie. So if I was going to do my own edit of the Hobbit movie, I would take out certainly that song. Yeah, another thing that I actually quite liked about the movie is when they did put in the Lord of the Rings stuff. There was one point where I thought it fit really well, is when they're bringing up the idea of the necromancer. And when I first read The Hobbit, I didn't understand who the necromancer was. You know, it's just like, oh yeah, and even at one point Merlin says, oh, I've got to go and there's some issues I've got to solve. It's like, oh, it must be really important if you...
Merlin?
Not Merlin. Gandalf.
Yeah.
So when Gandalf goes, wow, really lost all nerd credibility. When Gandalf is like, oh, there's this issue that I've got to go and sort out. And we never see what that issue is in the book, within the Hobbit itself. He just goes, and he just disappears. And you're like, well, what can be more important than going and killing this dragon and looking after these dwarves? He kind of got them. He kind of sent them on this adventure. Why doesn't he stick with the adventure? And he just disappears
just
for ages.
Leaves them. But he always appears.
And then he comes
right
back. Yeah. But then he comes back again. And you're like, well, where did you go to? But when they go through Mirkwood, he's like, look, I can't come with you through Mirkwood. I've got stuff to sort out. And you're like, but what are you going to sort out? And he just disappears. Now, in the movie, what I really like about it. Oh, no, what I'm saying is that back in the day when I first read this book, I never really worked out that the necromancer was Sauron. And then once I'd read The Lord of the Rings and then went back and read The Hobbit again, this is like another, still 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I read it again. I was like, oh, maybe the necromancer is bringing people back from the dead. Maybe the necromancer was bringing Sauron back from the dead, and that's what brings him back. And then I think, as far as I can tell from the movie itself now, the necromancer is Sauron, and it is Sauron who's come back, and he is the presence, you know, that kind of stuff. So what I really liked about the movie is when they get to Rivendell, and in the book of The Hobbit, there's just Galadriel isn't... No, who's the other ones who's there? Who's the main guy who's there? Mr. Smith, Agent Smith. What's his name?
I have no ideas about the names.
And he goes, Mr. Anderson. And that kind of stuff. So he's there, but the other guys aren't there. Like Saruman's not there and Galadriel's not there. But then in the movie, they are there, but they never meet the hobbits. So if Bilbo was writing this story, he would have never had Cate Blanchett turn up in the story because he never met her. And I really enjoyed her... turn in the movie. If you've seen the movie, you'll understand why I say I enjoyed her turn. I really quite enjoyed these other characters from the Lord of the Rings. In some ways, I liked it when it was going, ah, oh, now you got to do... Because I really want, like, the second movie to be them getting to the thing. And then in the end, I really want to see a showdown between Gandalf and Saruman and Radagast and the necromancer. Because, you know, that has happened. They did have that showdown, but it's never mentioned. Oh, it's like just mentioned in The Hobbit. Is like, yep, yeah, that's where Gandalf was all this time. We were sorting this stuff out down in the southern end of the murky forest, or whatever it is, Mirkwood, and in the north. What are you looking up in the book? What are you
want to explain? I just tried to find the character you're looking for.
What, Radagast?
Like, no, the elf.
Yeah, his name will come back to me. Elrond.
Yeah,
Hubbard.
It's Elrond.
Elrond Hubbard.
Yeah. But Radagast.
Yeah, Radagast, the mushroom eating wizard. I actually really
enjoyed his appearance in the movie.
Yeah.
Which wasn't chronological in the right order.
What, compared to the book?
Compared to the book.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed this little scene with him.
When he brings the hedgehog back to life. Now, if I was going to do an edit of that, I would have started it with that. I would have started it with him, and he comes in, and there's this darkness. You know, it starts off in that kind of dark place, but it also starts off with, like, okay, there's darkness, there's spiders, there's powerful wizards, which keep birds in the hat, and also sleds pulled by rabbits, and you're like, oh, okay, yay! So it's a kids' movie then, you know, like, and if you'd have started off with the sleds pulled by rabbits, you're like, okay, this is setting the tone, and there's the darkness there from, you know, the Lord of the Rings side, there's some brooding darkness coming through, and there's the sleds pulled by rabbits, and if they'd have started off with that, and then cut out loads of stuff at the beginning, we don't need to see Frodo, we don't need to see old Bilbo, just cut straight to where it starts in the book, where, you know, Gandalf turns up and says, good day. Is it a good day? Yes, that kind of stuff. You know, the whole that kind of, just start with there, and then just do it as in the book. So, like, when he gets the backstory of the dragon turning up, then do the backstory of the dragon turning up, rather than in the movie when you start with that, because it just felt too much like them, okay, let's start off in the tone of Lord of the Rings. And it's just like, no, start off with the tone of The Hobbit. Start with rabbits and silly wizards and hobbits, and then get onto dragons, which is what they do in the book. It's like quarter of the way through the book, or, you know, a long way into the introduction, where he's like, what? You know, and there's some really great stuff that I really loved in the movie, where he's like, yes, and we've got this contract for you, and he holds up this contract. And it just goes, flop, 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 flop.
And it's of, like, course, Bilbo is reading that contract.
And then he sits there and reads all the way through. He goes, no, of course I want to read this, but I really, really enjoyed so much in the movie, but like I say, take out half an hour of it, and just fix some of the tonal issues, and it would have been way better.
And you always must have in mind that the movie we've seen so far
is only a third of it.
A third of the whole.
Well, actually, let's get you halfway through the book, because that goes up to chapter Out of the Pan into the Fire, because that's where they get. So then they go through, because they didn't meet Bjorn the giant yet, did they? So they're on the edge of Mirkwood pretty much by the end of it. So it's the next chapter.
But they ended with the eagles, right?
Yes, yeah, and that, and that's the eagles drop them off. Yeah, the eagles drop them off at the end of the edge of the Mirkwood, pretty much.
Yeah, it's here. It's like, yeah, it's like a third.
Oh, okay, so it's not quite half of the way through. Okay, so it's about the third of the book.
But like, of course, the story in the book gets by a lot quicker than
you think. Like the movie, like the thing is, it's weird to have a movie. If they do split it into three, it'll literally take you less time to read the book than it would do to watch all three movies. And I don't really think there'd be a similar movie like that. Of course, there's like the Game of Thrones series that that's 12-hour-long episodes. But you still can't read all of the Game of Thrones books. You know, it might take you 12 hours. If you're a fast reader, you could probably get the story by reading quicker than you can get by watching it as a thing. But it's going to be strange, that kind of thing. They're going to have to find a lot of stuff.
And actually, The Hobbit is not a big chunky book. How many pages is it in English?
Like, very few. I mean, it's like 300 pages or something.
The German ebook version is like 397 pages.
Yeah, 310 pages for the first edition.
Like, it's not really a lot. It's really not a lot, and it's really impressive how they try to take this little book and make three. How long was the movie?
It was over 3 hours. Yeah,
three-hour movies of like this tiny story.
But that's what we're saying. They're padding out with the Lord of the Rings. Yeah, Lord of the Rings stuff. and too many dwarves. I know it's one of those weird things, but it's probably sacrilege for me to say, but if I was going to make that movie, sure, they didn't want 13 dwarves. They had to get a 14th member, so they brought in the Hobbit and stuff like that. I would have made it seven dwarves and just played on the seven dwarf thing. Because then you have seven dwarves, the hobbit, and you could reduce down all of those characters because you've got Orion, Dorian, Lorien, Snorian, Borian, Tori, you know, all of the hobbits. What they might have different names in German.
Just
but...
go to the page.
What?
And there they are written there.
The somewhere. Characters. No, it doesn't. It's not going to name all the characters because here we go.
Yeah.
Philly, Killy, Orin, Oin, Gloin, Beefer, Bofer, Bomber, Dory, Nori, Dwalin, Balin, Dane, Nain, Thorin, Oakenshield, and Gandalf. And of course, Bilbo as well. But like, you could have had. Philly, Killy, Orin, Gloin, Biffa, Bofur, and Thorin. And that's all you need. You don't need all of those, name after name after name after name, and they've all got different hairstyles, and it's all really confusing, and you can't really keep track of them, and they all get through all of the scrapes and stuff, and I know it's weird to say it, but I would have reduced the cast of dwarves by half, and just had, like, six dwarves or seven dwarves or eight dwarves or something like that, or even five of them or something like that. Just you can keep track of them, and it seems a bit more like manageable.
But you have to think till the end.
Yeah.
When they actually, like, they try to fight a big dragon. They can't just go there by, like, seven of them.
Yeah, but none of the, how are they going to kill they it let, anyway? None they, of them do. None yeah, of them know they, how they're going to kill
they,
it anyway.
They try to get as many dwarves.
I'm just saying, like, for filmmaking purposes. I'm not talking about purposes.
Yeah, but you have to have these characters that, like, they don't do anything. They just go with them, and they always stay the same number. Nobody's ever killed of these guys.
Yeah, all of them make it through. No. Some of them do die in the battle at the end.
In the end,
of course, Thorin does.
But,
yeah,
all of them go through the orc mines, like the orc caves. And
yeah,
all of them go through the battle with the mountain giants.
Yeah, they all get through it. Yeah, yeah.
And it's just
the horses don't make it.
Yeah, the ponies.
The ponies, yeah.
Not
sorry,
horses.
Sorry, the ponies don't make.
Yeah, but it's just something like this is something like very children's book. You have the 13 dwarves, and all of them make it till the end.
Yeah, and you didn't like that.
That's good.
Oh, you do like it? Yeah, in a children's book, you need that.
Yeah.
So, let me just think. So, what's the next... Which was the dwarves? Because I... Was it the... Who was the thingy of the other guy? No, in the Lord of the Rings. You know, in the Fellowship of the Rings, they fight a troll under the mountain, and they fight inside of Mordor.
Yeah.
No, not inside of Mordor. The caves of Moria. Mines of Moria. So they go in there and they fight a dwarf. The place where they're fighting is actually the tomb of, I think, is it Bombo or Bofo or something like that? It's one of the dwarves in this book.
In The Hobbit.
In The Hobbit.
Yes.
Where they actually fight that cave troll is actually his tomb, because he goes down to Moria.
Moria is where they're heading towards because there's a dragon.
No, that's not Moria. Moria is in the Lord of the Rings, in the Fellowship of the Rings. It's where they go through and they go through the thing and you shall not pass and that kind of stuff. That all goes on in... it's the Misty Mountains is where they go. No, not the Misty Mountains, the Lonely Mountain. Yeah. Moria is where it gets taken over by the goblins and stuff. Anyway, this has been the weirdest episode yet, because we've just been talking more about the movie than the book itself. But really, that's what we thought we were going to be doing. Anyway, we're doing this review, and we both read The Hobbit because we watched the movie.
And we still didn't say anything about the high frame rate.
Oh, the high frame rate was, high frame was awesome. We were just watching The Life of Pi today, and the 3D was great. I mean, I don't always enjoy 3D. When I watched Avatar... I really didn't like the 3D at all, but it seems like in the last few years since Avatar came out, these directors have actually kind of worked out what to do with 3D stuff. And all of the stuff today with Pai Patel and as they're swimming through the water, people swimming through crystal clear water is a fantastic use of 3D. It's just really good. And you go, ooh, like this. Another really cool use of 3D stuff is helicopter shots of hobbits running over landscapes of Middle Earth and zooming through caves underneath
caves with them being chased by by what were the
goblins?
Orcs,
goblins. So I think I've only seen three movies in 3D in the cinema, and one was Avatar. You know, it's Avatar, The Hobbit, and The Life of Pi. The Life of Pi I thought was very good 3D, but when the whole camera would swing to the side, everything on the screen would go in this big blurry mess, and you couldn't see anything. But with The Hobbit, with the high frame rate, when the camera would swing around, everything was perfectly crisp and perfectly clear, and for 3D stuff, I thought that worked super well. Everything was sharp, everything was clear, it was bright, the colours were good, and yeah, I was just very impressed with the high frame rate. However, I can understand how some people were looking and go, oh, it looks like a TV studio, because it took about 10 minutes to adjust or something like that, maybe a bit more.
Yeah. But it was very nice to look at it.
Yeah.
Because you could see every little detail in somebody's face, like some stones, like the surface of the stone.
But I must admit, at the beginning, it did look a bit like a set. You could see they were on a set, whereas that same place with Hobbiton, or, you know, the Underhill, or what do you call it, Bilbo's home, in The Lord of the Rings, that looked really lived in. And then in the Hobbit movie, it looked more like a set. Maybe just the lighting was a bit weird. You know, someone else, they'd got the same set and they just rebuilt the set and then went, okay, and it's going to be in 3D. And they hadn't quite worked out all of the details or all of the lighting stuff. It just looked a bit less real.
Yeah.
But then once they get out into the world and they start running around Middle Earth and going up and down mountains and under caves.
But I think they still like... The high frame rate is still something in development, and they're not come to that point yet where they know exactly what they're doing. It's more like experimental.
But like I just said, when I watched Avatar in 3D, a lot of the 3D annoyed me. Like most of the time, the 3D annoyed me. Except in some of the action pieces, and then it was really interesting. You know, when you're actually flying around on the backs of dragons, then you're like, oh, 3D, this is awesome, because, you know, you're focused on one thing, you're focused on the center of the action. But any time that it wasn't action and there was just things floating around, it really annoyed me. Whereas with these movies which came out 5 years later, that, like I say, the directors have kind of got to grips with the 3D. They know what they're doing. They've learned all the tricks. They know it's not just about shoving things in people's faces. Like in The Hobbit, I think there was like one or two times when someone waved a sword at the camera, and in The Life of Pi, there was one moment where he's got that stick. You probably recognize the moment where he sticks it out. But that whole stick was out of focus and he was in focus. So even though there was something really up close, it wasn't like, and now the bit where something sticks out into your face and everyone flinches back. No, it was actually a really calming kind of thing. It's like, and now he's being very careful. This isn't just going to fly out into your face and go boo like that and it's sticking out. So they kind of used this, the 3D, and they've kind of worked out what works really fantastically with 3D. And it's like stars and fish going through space and stuff like that. And what people said about Prometheus, it's like all these whooshy, swirly things and these displays and these, you know, representations of the galaxy that have all this depth and stuff. That's what works really well. And, you know, also what they were doing with the 3D in The Hobbit. But the high frame rate, it's still going to take 5 years for all the directors to go, oh, this is what we do with high frame rate, you know, and then putting it together with 3D. Yeah. But for a normal,
if you just would watch high frame rate on a normal normal 2D television, this actually would be a bit annoying.
Yes, I think it would.
It would like look like a cheap,
like a sports broadcast,
soap opera, or like a documentation, because it's just normal. It is so quick that it looks, everything just,
but for 3D
normal.
You need that crispness. That's the thing, that's what I really loved about the 3D. That is true, but I think, like, if you're gonna do a high frame rate, which because the high frame rate makes it look like a soap, you've got to have something which looks as little like a soap as possible to take you away from that, to take your brain association away from that. And I think Lord of the Rings Hobbit scale kind of thing, where it is dragons and Middle Earth and elves and goblins and sweeping vistas, is about as untelevisual as you can get. So it kind of forces you to go, no, this isn't a TV set, this isn't video, this is actually cinematic. Unfortunately, there was like 45 minutes spent inside one room, you know, of them singing and juggling and that kind of stuff. And I thought that was the worst thing to start with. You know, of course, there was a bit of dragon action before then, but then it was still too new. Like when they, in the very opening of the Hobbit movie, there's this thing where they're digging under the Lonely Mountain and this it zooms down through, you know, where all these dwarves are hammering away at the rocks. And I was just like, that is it was breathtaking. I watched it and I was just like, right.
This is massive.
Yeah, now I understand high frame rate. I mean, it was like right at the beginning. It's like, now I understand what 3D and high frame rate in modern movies can do. And it can make you go, like, wow, scale. It can make you go, wow, epic, which was needed.
Yeah.
You needed that at the beginning. Unfortunately, like I say, then it went into a room.
This really crystal clearness of the things you see, especially in 3D, which makes it really, really worth spending so much money.
Cost so much money, yeah. Now, what did we pay for that one? I know, I can't remember. No, it wasn't too much because we didn't pay for parking either, did we? We parked nearby whatever.
No, we paid like €32 for the...
Yeah, two people, yeah.
It's
quite expensive. Yeah, because we forgot to bring... We had to pay for extra another euro each for the glasses.
For the glasses,
this time, when we went to see the live pie, we already had the glasses.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say about The Hobbit? I mean, again, hardly even mentioned the book. We hardly mentioned Gandalf or any of these characters.
I mean, probably it's because everybody already knows the story. Yeah. Right? I mean, what should we talk about the book?
I mean, normally I talk about the themes of the book, and this is about... But a lot of the themes, it's difficult to bring them out because it's like... I thought it was weird that like Bilbo in the movie is very much like, oh, I'm just doing this and I'm not, you know, oh, I don't want to come along and I'm not going to come along and the dwarves leave without him and then he changes his mind and runs after them. Whereas in the book, he's just like, yes, I'll come on your adventure, you know, and he just agrees to it straight away. And yet a lot of the time he's just like, oh, I'm just and everything that happens to him in the book seems to be luck based on his character. And his character is actually sneaky in some ways, and he lies a lot, and all these different kind of things. And in the book, his I wouldn't kind of say his morality, but his outlook on life is not human. Hobbits are not human. They have this crafty, sneaky nature, which is why the dwarves want him. But
yes,
we kind of project onto him, or like especially in the movie as well, it's kind of projected onto him. It's like, no, he's the good guy. He's like the human character. He's the more human character alongside the dwarves and alongside the orcs and the other.
What I think it's difficult, like especially when you want to make a movie out of that. In the book, you really have a lot of thoughts going on.
Yeah.
And you can't really show that in the movie.
That's true.
It's difficult to show that, like, his ancestor, like, Gandalf tells him that... No, was it before? No, anyway, like, the ancestor of Bilbo, there was this...
The Took family.
Which were, like, not the typical hobbits. They were, like, really, like, oh, yeah, adventure.
Very tall. They're so tall they could ride a horse.
Yes, tall and ride a horse. Like, really, really adventurous. And
he knocked off the goblin's head and it fell down a rabbit hole and he won the war and invented golf at the same time. Yeah.
So, and in the book, you have a lot of this going on and then you think, oh, yes, but I'm half a Took. So maybe I should do something.
No. And the whole being half a Took is in the movie. Nothing. It's just not mentioned at all. It just goes with it. So what I'm saying, like, talking about the thematic kind of thing, it's sort of like, no, they're hiring him to be a burglar. He is the burglar. He's the thief. That's what they're taking him for. And then he does a good job at the end. And it's like, yes, you're going to do the thief. You're going to do this thing. And it's really weird that it's sort of like his profession or his stated job is something which is, I wouldn't say immoral, but is at least illegal, unethical. But he does a good job with it. And he's proud of his good job of doing something which is normally considered not good. And in a children's book, I think that's actually, I wouldn't say it's subversive or anyway, but it's certainly this kind of weird thing. It's just like, is it just because he's the main character? He's definitely the very sympathetic character. But then you kind of watch Dexter and he's like, oh, okay, well, he's a policeman, but then he's a serial killer. But you want him to do a good job. And when he does do a good job, you're like, yes, you're a good person because you've done a good job. What job do you do? Serial killing. Ah, yeah, maybe it's not. But he's a robber and he's like doing this and he's going to, but it's like, yes, you've done a good job. Why? What's with the job? Well, you're going to steal stuff, really? Well, it's from a dragon, so it's okay. And Dexter only kills serial, kills murderers, isn't it? You know, kills other murderers. So I'm just saying this whole kind of slightly nebulous ethical situation. And in the end, it's about greed. Like, even in this book, you know, put aside The Lord of the Rings, where it's all about I want it, it's mine, that precious is. In the Hobbit, you understand that at the end, that some characters get their comeuppance because they're too greedy and they only want the gem that they want? The Arkan Shield? No, the Arkan Heart? Heart of the Mountain? What's it called?
I'm very bad in remembering these names there.
Back to the Hobbit we go! Back to the Wikipedia Hobbit thing. Plot.
Arkenstone.
Arkenstone.
Yeah.
So it's very much about the greed of the dwarves. It's like, yes, they're dwarves. It's in their nature to be greedy, and in the Bilbo's nature to be honest, because he is very honest in some ways. Like, he lies a lot, but then he always ends up telling the truth.
Yes, and I think that's a very good. That is the bit that makes this such a good children's book, because the moral idea of transporting. Oh, there is good and there is bad, but also it can be both in one person. You can have like this, oh no, and I do that, and that is bad.
But there's this great moment in the book where he's like, and now Smeagol, no, not Smeagol, he's not Smeagol there, he's just Gollum. It's sort of like, and Gollum's in front of me, and he's harmless, he's got his back to me, and I'm invisible, and I've got my knife out, and now I can kill him and put him out of his misery. Shall I do it? And in the book, there's this great moment. It's like, yes, I will. No, I won't. Yes, I will. No. And it's like, yeah, no. Yeah, no. I don't know how long it goes on for in the book, but it is a great moment. In the movie, that's kind of skipped over a bit, because you couldn't kill Gollum, because he's like one of the main characters in the later. Of course, no, I'm not saying he would kill a Gollum, but it's one of those weird things where in the movie, it's just sort of like one tiny moment, whereas in the book, it's like a deliberation. It's like, is it okay for me to kill this guy?
Yes, and this is the question of
and then it's the
good
the,
and evil
with the dragon at the end.
At the
it's like,
time.
Is it okay to kill the dragon?
One more thing about why it's a children's book for me, which is like the main point,
mm-hmm.
Is what when you read it and you actually concentrate on the sentences,
they're
really easy constructed. Like, it's very...
Even in the German translation, yeah.
Of course.
It's a very basic writing.
It's very basic. You have many, many little sentences, like just normal sentence, like main sentence, without lots of things in between and like around and then here. And then, oh, we have something from the past and going on at the same time. And then, no, it's just one sentence and then it stops. And this is what makes it so much like a children's book.
Yeah.
Even when, especially when you read it as an adult, you have to get into that
writing
a lot.
You've got to go to this. And now, here's what happened next, children. You know, it has
that. And the orcs did that.
Yes.
And then he did this. Yeah. And yeah. So this is, now when I actually got to that point, this is probably my little complaint about it, why it wouldn't get 5 stars for me now.
Yeah, because it's talking down to you a bit.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you can. Maybe we can unearth Tolkien's rewrite of it, where he was going to do that. We should do a rewrite of it yourself. You know, write an adult version, like change all the sentences to be more. But yeah, exactly. It wouldn't be The Hobbit anymore, would it? You'd enjoy it less.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Is it a complaint or is it not a complaint? Or would it just not be The Hobbit anymore?
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not a complaint in kind of, oh, it should be different.
Yeah.
It's more like a complaint about me saying, oh, why didn't I read it when I was 10?
Okay. Yeah, because you'd have got more joy, like I did, you know.
Yes,
like,
So.
Yeah, so I quite like it. I'll give it 4 stars, 4.5 stars, maybe, I don't know. I mean, it's weird now because I'm only reading books that I know I'm enjoying because I'm rereading a lot of this stuff. But I think it's a really enjoyable book, and Bilbo is when you're reading it, you're like, oh, he's not much of a character, but then you realize there's a lot going on there. Like, it's very rare that when you get to the end of the book that the main character is a guy who is willing to sacrifice it all so a war doesn't happen, and I really like that. You know, I like, so often in these books, it's sort of like, and now we get to the end of the book, our hero is the guy who puts on the helmet and charges into battle and saves the day. And Bilbo is the hero because he tries to do the right thing at the end and stop this war happening and fails. But it turns out things turn out okay anyway, except lots of people die. And you realise that it's just the start of the darkness that is going to come into the Lord of the Rings anyway. So it's this weird kind of bittersweet thing, but he's definitely redeemed at the end of any bad stuff that he'd done beforehand. He gets it, you know, Bilbo gets it back again. He even pays for the food that he stole off the Elven King's tables when he was an invisible thief running around, running around the Elven Riven, no, the, what is it, the Mirkwood, anyway. Whatever it is.
All these names.
All these different things.
No, what I really want to say is, if you have children and they're the right age, like let's say 10.
Yeah.
Give them The Hobbit.
Yeah, really.
It's a really good book for children. They will really enjoy the story and the adventures and all that. And they will be really into that when they read it. And it's a good length for children as well. Like 300 pages.
Yeah.
Perfect length for children's book. Yeah, give it your children to read.
Yep. I'm going to give it 4 stars. Maybe 4.5. 4 stars or 4.5 stars? I don't know. And the movie, I'd give 3 and 3.5 stars. But then again, that's still a good recommendation. what else to say? Don't think much else to say. You can become my friend on goodreads.com. I'm Luke Burge on there. You can also... become Juliana's friend on there. She's also there. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge on Twitter. And you can also check out sfbrp.com. And you can click on the episode list. And you can see every single book that I've reviewed so far. And you can sort them by the book. Or you can sort them by the author. Or you can sort them by episode. Or you can sort them by star ratings. So you can see... all of the 5-star books and 4-star books and all the other star rating books. And I promise you people, it's not all going to be books I love for the rest of the year. I'm sure I'm going to submit myself to some books that I don't like. For example, David Brin's Existence, except that I dislike it so much I'm probably not going to get to the end of it and might not be able to do a review of it. Actually, it's not that I don't like it. It's just that it's just not good enough for me to get through it. It's one of those weird ones. Maybe I'll get the paperbook rather than the audiobook version and see.
Don't you have it upstairs?
No, that's a different book.
Ah, but it's also David Brin.
Yeah, I can't remember what book it is. I've got lots of books hanging around the place. Anyway, so otherwise check out the Audible audibletrial.com/SFBRP if you want to sign up and get a free audiobook and start an Audible account like what I do, and in that way you can help support the SFBRP, etc. That's it. So say goodbye, Juliana, to everyone who's listening.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me too. Bye.
You should stop it now.
I will stop it now.